So this is the 15 January work session on Washington State's five-year health care innovation plan and that plan's impacts to Clark County. And time is 10:30.
We're all here. Let's get started. I guess whoever's leading this off.
I will, my colleague, Dr. Alan Melnick, hopefully he'll join, but for the recorder here, this is January 15th, 10:30 work session on Washington State's five-year healthcare innovation plan, the impacts to Clark County. My name is Vanessa Gaston. I'm the director for Clark County Community Services. Maybe we should introduce everybody in the audience.
This way. Mark Ballin, Southwest Washington Behavioral Health.
I'm Connie Mochick, I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Southwest Washington Behavioral
My name is Chris Ford, I'm Deputy Prosecutor for Clark County.
My name is Taylor Halvin, I'm the Deputy Prosecutor for Clark County.
And David Nador, County Commissioner.
Tom Milkey, County Commissioner.
Steve Short, County Commissioner.
Mark McCauley, County Administrator.
I'm Jane Dowling, District Clark's Office.
I'm Becky Anderson, I'm the Chair of the Southwest Behavioral Health Advisory Board.
John Lee, citizen.
Brad Alberts, Southwest Washington Behavioral Health. Mary Kelly, Clark County Risk Manager.
Mary Kelly, Clark County Public
Information. Southwest Washington Behavioral Health Communications and Voting Department.
Can you see their Clark County Department of Community Services?
I'm Larissa Larson, I'm Clark County. This is one of the Clark County Budget Office. I'm here about the budget.
All right. Dr. Relding.
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you.
So we're going to go ahead and get started. Make sure this works. So basically, we wanted today to talk to you a little bit about some major changes happening at the state level. Then we're going to talk about some regional work that we're doing. And then we want to specifically target what the impacts are to Clark County, because there will be some changes and impacts to Clark County government itself. But the state has submitted a plan to the federal government. They are calling it the State Healthcare Innovation Plan. And basically, their goal is by 2019, they want to achieve this vision. And they want to make sure that all people in Washington achieve and maintain a better health. And they want to do that by making sure that they look at prevention. But they also want to look at how can they focus more on primary care and at the same time reduce costs. So this whole goal is to kind of also save some money as well.
Vanessa, when you say the state, who's the state?
So it's the governor, Washington Healthcare Authority, Department of Social Health Services, Department of Health. Help me out, is anybody on this end? That's it. Those are the three agencies.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
I just want to talk to you a little bit about, people have been asking, what is the state trying to fix? And so basically, a lot of times what they are talking about is how they currently procure Medicaid services. And this is currently how the contracts come down for physical care, mental health, chemical dependency, and then long-term care. So as you can see up here, Healthcare Authority has a direct contract with managed care organizations to do physical health, and they also do low to moderate mental health. And there's five of them across the state. DSHS has direct contracts with, for substance abuse, with counties. There's 39 counties, and we do the outpatient services, and then they manage the inpatient. And then again, the RSNs, which you have represented here today, there's 11 of them from Southwest Behavioral Health is in our area. They do the chronic and severe mental health. They're responsible for that. And then you have the AAAs, Area Agency on Disability. They handle a lot of the senior disability and long-term care services. And they feel this is a fragmented system. Is a very highly administrative burdensome for them, and they feel that it's time to integrate everything into approved care right now.
Vanessa, there is also Southwest Washington Aging and Disability.
Yes.
I would expect they would.
They're part of the AAA. They're one of the 13 AAAs.
Okay.
And again, this is just to reiterate that some of the problems with the system is they feel the payment of Washington tends to be fee for service, which really incentivizes seeing more people, not necessarily helping people be healthier. They feel it's fragmented, and they really want to do more work around population health approaches, around integration of care, better coordination, so that people can actually improve in their care. A lot of this is coming directly from Healthcare Authority's PowerPoint presentations that they have been doing in the fall. Again, they basically are calling it the Washington Way, and their whole goal is they want to integrate physical health, chemical dependency and mental health funding in Medicaid. And they're looking at some strategies of how they can do it by 2019, but they do plan to restructure how they do Medicaid in two phases. So they do want to start off by doing a procurement for chemical dependency and mental health, and then one for physical health, and then for areas at the same time that are interested in doing it all, you can apply to be an early innovator. But by 2019, they do want to put out procurement out with all those programs are in there. So that. Yes.
Is the foundation for all this connectivity, all this integration, Medicaid only?
Yes, it's Medicaid. And state funding connected to the Medicaid,
and
but
Medicaid
it's Medicaid.
Medicaid is for those that cannot afford Medicare or other health care, right?
Well, Medicaid is low income, and it tends to be for people, and they took away the categorically eligible requirements. You just need to be low income. A lot of them are disabled. A lot of them have families with children. But the primary factor is you are low income and you meet the guidelines for income.
So this doesn't apply. If they're not low income, then none of what we're talking about here applies to them.
So you're talking about the health plans and the insurance exchange and small businesses for employees. I think the goal for the insurance exchange is they feel like, you know, all care needs to be improved. So you should do coordination and care across all systems. But the state is going forth with Medicaid, so.
So we're talking about everybody up to, with the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid would be everybody up to 138% of the federal poverty level would be eligible to be. So that's what we're talking about here. That being said, when we create a model like this, and if we're successful in creating a model like this, it wouldn't surprise me whether the private sector and private insurance companies were interested in participating in something like this. Because if we're really successful with the Medicaid population and do business differently than we have before, we'll actually be able to improve their health at a lower cost than previously. So I think other people would eventually join in. But what we're talking about right now is the Medicaid population.
And then their second strategy is they want to go to regionalization, and they want to create, and we'll go into some details, some regions, but they want to create what they call accountable collectives. This has come out of accountable communities of health, but they've changed it to accountable collectives of health.
Okay, one more question. With what is in the air right now with the Affordable Care Act, or I call it Unaffordable Insurance Act, that has nothing to do with what we're doing here. Medicaid is constant, that's not changing, that this is just having to do with low-income individuals, making sure they get service, and all this other about the insurance clearing sites and all that, that's...
We're still talking about Medicaid, but Washington State went for the Medicaid expansion, so which is the opportunity under the ACA. So in Washington State, we're talking about everybody who's up to 138% of the federal poverty level. They'll be eligible for, this is a Medicaid expansion. So, for example, there'll be a lot of low-income adults who before did not have Medicaid at all, did not have access, will now be newly eligible for Medicaid.
So it's like the Access to Care Act, then, instead of any of the other stuff.
And I would also say that we are not having problems with people enrolling in our insurance exchange. It's taken some time. It's slow. But like Oregon, theirs is completely down. Ours is functional. And people are enrolling into the Medicaid program. They've got some people in private insurance. And they're still trying to work out the small business, because right now Kaiser is the only one available in the shop, which is the small business health plans. So,
okay. In the future of the healthcare industry, the non-Medicaid is in flux, is in question right now. For instance, some are saying, what if it gets repealed, or what if it changes form? That's not so much affecting us, because this is more of a well-defined, stable, whatever they do there is not likely going to have much of an impact here, right?
Unless the Medicaid expansion went away, but given the Medicaid expansion, which is part of the ACA, we're just talking about, right now, we're just talking about the Medicaid population.
And this is the, and I would say the state's plan, they're saying they're moving forward regardless of what happens on the federal government, though.
Yeah.
What is the 138% of poverty?
It depends on how large the family is. So, I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but we can get that.
I believe they said for an individual, it's about 15,000 to 16,000. So, kind of figure
it out. It starts single individual.
About 15,000 to 16,000 gross you can make.
But it's going to be higher. You know, if you got a family of four, for example, the number is going to be higher.
How many are Medicaid eligible, roughly, in Clark County?
So the last numbers we saw, there was about 29,000 of uninsured. Do you know the numbers we've rolled so far? We are supposed to roll about 4,000, maybe 5,000 by March.
In Clark County.
And I don't know the numbers. I don't have on
I don't have them on hand, but we can get that for you. It's a substantial number of people because we're talking about heretofore, you know, young adults who are not eligible, or adults who are low income and not eligible.
And a lot of the people we serve with our sales tax would be on Medicaid.
And I'm not just talking about the expansion, too. I mean, overall, like, what's the universe when we're talking about scope? How many citizens in Clark County are we talking about with this program? Not just the expanded, but the
existing Medicaid population.
So the existing Medicaid, you guys know that.
So the 29,000 is also Clark County uninsured.
That was the total number of people uninsured in Clark County, 29,000 when they started in October. You guys have the number of Medicaid.
Eligible. Say again,
Congressman. So we get paid on a per member per month based on the number of eligibility for
that number.
For the entire region. So specifically for Clark County, we're looking at probably close to 75,000 Medicaid eligible.
75,000 Medicaid eligible.
With the expansion?
Is that with the expansion?
With not with the expansion, no. Yeah. In the region, there's about 97,000. Clark County has about 76,000, 75,000. This last month, we just saw a 13% increase in the number of counties. So we went up to a total to about 103,000.
So a quarter, so with expansion, we can expect about a quarter of the population of Clark County is Medicaid eligible and be affected by what we're talking about.
You know, I was going to throw out 100,000, but it sounded about right. But, yeah, I don't have the exact number with me, but it's tens of thousands. It's a substantial population.
And this is just part of a memo that the governor had sent out to the state about kind of his plans, and that he actually had mentioned some of this in his state of the address yesterday. So we want to talk about the region. So the state is proposing 7 regions or 9 regions. They probably will land with 9 regions. One of the things they are asking county commissions to do, and they want us to start this month, is that they want counties to determine what region you want to be a part of. So part of what we want to do today, you know, we're Southwest, you know, we're Suffolk South, but they have us part of Region 5, and as you can see, those 5 counties in red are part of the Southwest Washington region, and then you can ask, you can imagine what the other regions are. So this is for the 7 regions. This is 9.
Same
for us. So basically, the biggest change for us, because we already work with Wakayakum, Cowlitz, and Skamania, is Klickitat. They've added Klickitat over into our area, and we have gotten some feedback and some input from the medical providers. They want to be in our region, and also from the Southwest Washington Area Agency. The one dilemma, though, is the RSN with the behavioral health, because their RSN is more with Yakima. So just wanted to let you know, so one of the things we are going to ask you to say is we would like to stay in Southwest Washington, and then we need to let our lobbyists know with County Association of County Human Services, so she can start tracking for all the counties.
Can we talk to Klickitat County as to what their brothers is? Because, I mean, I assume they'll have the same conversation and wondering whether or not they're going to be part of kind of the Yakima region of ours.
That's part of the plan, because in February we're going to be a part of the Skamania County Commission meetings, and then we got to work to move to Klickitat. We've already talked to Wakayakum County Commissioners, and they want to stay in Southwest Washington.
So the physical health providers is the Rock Creek Clinic. It's a rural health clinic. Private doc's office. They're the providers. They're the physical health providers, both in Skamania and in Klickitat. So they have two offices, and the physical health providers are certainly interested. In fact, one of their clinic managers is on the Regional Health Alliance Board of Directors. But the physical health providers are on board with wanting to be part of this region.
First, I want to talk about the initiative about the Accountable Collective Communities of Health, which is this kind of regional organization. This is controversial because they want to look at public health. They want to look at the RSNs. They want to look at a lot of the different functions to create this work. of what they want to do. And basically what they want to do is have everybody at the table. So providers with payers, counties, tribes, everybody at the table. And they want it to be a separate independent organization. It could be a nonprofit or a quasi-government organization. And the whole goal is to focus on system changes and to have private money and public money come together and figure out how you fund it. That's what basically it's boiling down to is what they want from these accountable collectors of health. People feel like, are you trying to replace the public health boards? Are you trying to replace the RSNs or the AAAs? And actually, those organizations are supposed to be a part of the accountable collectors of health. So it's not meant to replace them.
I understand the communities of health. We've got these communities that we're binding together, in our case, five counties. They must have had something in particular in mind when they said accountable. Who are they accountable to? Why the focus on accountability?
So you will have to have a contract with healthcare authority. I mean, it's just not us being free down here. We will have to meet certain standards and requirements as to what a accountable collective of health will be. They are looking for some pilots to do the first 2 to 3 by July 2015. So there will be a contract and there will be some indicators in there, and they'll probably have some clear outcomes for health improvement that they want to see us do.
There's a lot of advocacy going on right now with the county associations to really maintain control at the local and regional level where the work is getting done, where we have these great organizations that are already integrating, you know, physical, mental, and behavioral health, and not creating a whole new set of accountability criteria that are measured at the state level without responsiveness to the citizens and the bodies at the regional and local level. So I know that the State Association of Counties, and I assume that WASALFO and others are fighting at the state level and advocating for local control of this, and of the accountability being really focused on where the services are provided and to the communities where they're provided, as opposed to some random state.
The whole concept of accountability came up out of the failure of the managed care experiments going back to the 90s, and you know, our system that Vanessa already explained, right now we have a fee-for-service system that basically rewards widgets and doing more, and that hasn't worked out really well. Then we had the managed care experiment going back in the 90s that actually rewarded people for not doing anything, and that had problems. So the new model is we're going to, it's kind of similar to managed care in that we don't want unnecessary stuff being done, but we also want whoever's providing the services to be accountable for actually outcomes. It's not enough just to deny things and save money that way, but the idea is you're going to be rewarded for, and you're going to be accountable for actually producing some positive health outcomes in the population that you're taking care of. So that's where that whole concept of accountability came from, and it's part of the ACA as well.
So it sounds like there's a kind of a tension, a tug of war here. One is that the state thinking accountability to the state, who's receiving federal funds that needs to be accountable to the feds.
Right.
But at the other end of that tension is accountability to the counties for local control. And that's really our focus here. We're concerned about that. Make sure we have local control here, not some centralized bureaucracy someplace.
Right. If we're going to have accountability, we feel like we're part of this community. The accountability should be here, and we're in the best position to have that kind of oversight. That's exactly it.
And then these are just some other stuff that they have as far as what they're looking at for these accountable collectives of health. Public health is a key part of this because they do want to see a regional-wide health needs assessment to see the counties work together. And we've already gotten some work done with our public health, already have started to work in partnership in that area. So here's the Medicaid procurement. This is probably the most biggest change coming. And as you can imagine, there's a lot of angst to this. But the governor is proposing a two-phase process. First, to look at in January 2015, and these dates may change because the legislature may change them, but they're looking at doing an RFP to create a behavioral health organization for mental health and substance abuse. RSNs do have the opportunity to apply, as well as private and nonprofit health plans. Anybody interested that they're looking at? And they are opening the door for any region that would like to look at doing complete integration of Medicaid. They want the contracts in place by January 26th, And then by 2019, their plan is all of these programs are to be integrated in Medicaid, and they probably are still looking at putting them through risk-bearing entities. So.
So if I understand correctly, the state is saying you will have this region that's accountable and managed, and their focus is just to make sure that that's, they don't care if that's some national, private, for-profit organization that comes in and says, well, we're accountable to the state, versus our own coalition of providers that is really, we're in the driver's seat as the commissioners from five counties to make sure that our local interests are a priority, not the profit of a central national organization.
That's basically why we're here and what we're interested in.
That the state who's pushing us and demanding us would prefer, would be looking out for our own communities and not saying, well, just do the most bang for the buck for bringing in national companies.
Actually, I think, and we can talk about this more, but I think some folks at the state would actually be really excited about the innovation that we're talking about and what we're talking about here. We just want to make sure that whatever legislation comes out kind of allows that to happen and is flexible to allow that to happen. But the state is very interested in what we're doing here from our own conversations.
So what you're doing here is you're developing a model, and the state is watching us, and so basically you are the innovators to form this together and pioneer this new kind of a structure.
That's exactly right, and I think we have an opportunity to do something here that might actually work and work well.
The question is going to be, what are the accountability measures that are required by the state? And as we see in many other areas, the state, there are some within the state, that the state bureaucracies that will that are supportive of us acting as the engine of innovation at the local level, but there are many others that want to maintain control. Mm-hmm. Control over the outcomes and control over the policies that we are basing success on. And the legislature many times will say they want to help set the policies for success. So do the agencies. We see it in a lot of areas where they'll set the measures for success because they want to maintain accountability and control over the outcomes, because they're responsible for the money. It's really their money that they're passing through to us. And so there becomes that's the push and the pull, the tug of war that you talked about earlier. And it exists very clearly right now. And the State Association of Counties has been talking a lot about it, that they're recognizing that there is that tug of war right now, and they're kind of pulling out one end to get to local control.
So I assume what that translates to ideally would be the balance that the state provides universal standards that are broad enough to that mm-hmm. we're all kind of doing the same thing that makes sense, but the control of that ends up being maximize
it
the local
and a lot of these are not mutually exclusive. There's some really good minds at the state who want this to work out as well. So it's not mutually exclusive. And I think if we do it this way, my gut feeling is whatever standards the state comes up with, we're actually going to do a better job of doing it by doing it this way.
So we're going to get into what this way is, but if you follow what the state does, I know this is a very completed chart, but this is what they're hoping is happening. Is you got the accountable collectives of health on one side and the risk-bearing entities on the other, and the risk-bearing entity would sit on the board for the accountable collectives of health, and that's where your community is. We actually have a different model we would like to take a look at, because we think this won't change too much of anything for the improvement of the health. So we have created what we're calling a Southwest Washington Regional Health Alliance. It is a nonprofit organization. It is in existence. The collective work has been going on since September of 2010. And basically, it spun out of the counties. And this was to look at, we're bearing a lot of the brunt of the healthcare costs in our jails with our local funds. We have RSNs. We've managed the chemical dependency funds. And we wanted to see who's going to help us try to focus on this population that's very difficult. So our whole goal in working with, at that time, was four counties. Now we've added Klickitat, and the tribe is with us, as well as the hospitals, the health systems, providers, college. We have Clark College, Lower Columbia College. We have a lot of partners. Actually, let's go back. So here's who the partners are. This is just kind of a categorical list of who has been working with us and who is part of the partnership to help make this happen. So we have been very fortunate to be able to have a lot of people be involved with us for 3 years and stay there for 3 years. Yes?
I got a question. The tribes are in there to receive benefits, but the benefits that the community provides or receives are a result of each of us paying taxes. Are the tribes paying taxes into Medicaid in order to, in other words, are getting back what they're putting in, or are they basically receiving that only?
No, they pay taxes, and they're a sovereign nation, so they get their own direct Medicaid funds, and they actually have a clinic up in Longview, and they do some mental health services and some domestic violence services and some drug and alcohol in our community. They try to find a way to touch. They have like 11 counties they have to serve in Cal. It's Indian tribe. So, and they do have some funds that they use locally to help with that, but they are part of the table because they do get their own Medicaid funds, and they are a direct service provider.
So they would be integrated into this. There's some, at the big picture, there's integration, but there's some special things within those.
Yes.
Back to on this picture right here, you have the county and tribal services, and then the RSN. Isn't RSN the same as the county?
Yes. But they're a health plan. That's why they have them pulled out separate. They're not a program. They're a health plan. So.
Commissioner Middle, I just wanted to clarify your question around the tribe. RSN system across the state, the 11 RSN system, they already get paid in for a tribal member. So not every single tribal member receives mental health treatment in the tribal clinic. There are some tribal members that receive services from the RSN system. So therefore, if they are Medicaid eligible, they will be captured in the payment to the RSN system.
But that's the RSN. But for medical, they get their own direct money.
But, you know, the other point to make about this is, first of all, tribal members are all, they live throughout the region, and they're going to be getting services in lots of places. But even with their clinic, I think the tribe understands that by coming together, by working together, including having, like a health information exchange where we share data, ultimately the care is going to be better for tribal members if they're part of the system rather than being out to the side.
Just one clarification. In direct answer to your question, tribes do not pay taxes. Tribal members pay taxes. And so if it's a tribe as a whole that makes income, they're, as a sovereign nation, they're not subject to income tax statutes. But the individual members are. So there is a distinction between them.
Before you go too far, let's see. Can you go back to the partner?
Oh, there we go.
Okay. So law and justice isn't, I don't see it represented on here. And it's one of the big conversations that we have here locally and we have at the state level, that the largest provider of mental health facilities is the jail. Mm-hmm. And it is not what we think is best, but it is the reality of the situation. So. And I don't see law and justice in the Regional Healthcare Alliance either. I don't see it in any of the provider areas.
So we have reached out to them. We have worked with the Superior Court, to Brad Feingood. He attended some of the early meetings. The Vancouver Fire Department actually had somebody participate. But what they've asked is bring us in on special projects because of time issues. They can't come to all these different meetings. And so we work with CRESA. Doug Lee Smith was a part of the meetings. And then we have also worked with members of the Vancouver Moore Police Department who have been more interested in following this as members of the SOP. So not necessarily they don't come to every meeting, but they are on the email distribution
list. I didn't hear CCSO. I didn't hear the Sheriff's Office.
We have done some outreach. We haven't gotten like a representative probably. So, but maybe with Rick Bishop there, we could probably.
I'd love to see more work done on that because they are absolutely critical when we're talking about mental health, as well as substance, as well as chemical dependency issues. I mean, the jail is a central focus of where citizens, where residents that are having these troubles are getting put.
I couldn't agree with you more, and it's not just the jail itself, it's the population that's in the jail. The jail really is part of the community, and the patients or the clients that come in and out through the community, and the counties are liable in terms of the cost. I mean, failed treatment for chemical dependency or mental health issues, people end up in jail unnecessarily. Those are preventable. There's a cost to the county. We're committed. I think if we have local control here and we have we work through the RHA, I think we're better off at addressing that particular issue.
The jails aren't our jail specifically, and most jails don't have adequate facilities to handle these issues. So we've got to have, if you want to integrate the system, then you are missing a huge portion of the program.
Not only do they not have any adequate facilities, but there really needs to be coordination. When somebody gets released, I've done a lot of jail health services. I did it for years, so I have a real interest in this, and including work around the chemical dependency issues. It's not just, you know, that people sit there and they may not get mental health or chemical dependency treatment while they're sitting there, but there's also a disconnect when people get released from the jail. They go out into the community without any kind of support or tracking. So,
well, the board yesterday approved two jail discharge planners.
Is it off?
I think it's on.
No.
There you go.
Now. Yeah, yesterday the board approved the funding of two jail discharge planners to serve the very purpose that Dr. Melnick is talking about.
But I think that was a great move in what the board did in terms of discharge planners, but we really need to do more than that, and they need to be integrated into the health systems in the community. It's crucial. We're not going to achieve this triple aim and improve the health of the population without that.
Make sure how he incorporates that.
Thank you.
This is who's on the board of the Regional Health Alliance. Myself and Alan are on the board, and our goal is once we actually get the infrastructure going and we actually have some staff hired, we will actually step down, and then we will ask a commissioner to join the board so that we will have a local elected official on the board for Clark County. So that's our intent.
And that's the current state. And I don't see counties launching the same up there as the RSN. But as we go through this, I mean, part of this is determining whether or not that makes sense, because it sounds like if we're going to push for integration, unless there's a really good reason not to, that we may not be up there.
And actually, Commissioner Maduro, staff are planning to put as an action item on the next SWBHW board for you all to consider whether it makes sense for us to be on the RHA board as either a voting member or a non-voting member. I cannot, select myself to be on the board without appropriate action taken by all of you.
Yes, and all of these members that are listed there, they're all voting members.
Voting members.
There is no such thing as a non-voting member.
There is no non-voting member. The bylaws don't allow for that. So if you're not on the board, then you're part of the work groups then. So basically, we are looking at what is our role in this state plan. We have definitely the option to apply to be the accountable collective of health, and we are definitely taking that serious because we are set up to do that role. We would have to go through a proposal process and work with healthcare authority to get the application approved and all that. But we also have, we're fortunate to work with health partners, Legacy, Kaiser and Providence, who also are in Portland, who are a part of creating the Health Share Coordinated Care Organization. And they have talked with us a lot, and we had a retreat in October, and we want to explore, could we create a similar model in Southwest Washington where we actually combine those two, and put them into one. And we become the risk-bearing entity for the integrated funds as well as the accountable collective of health. And then we would get to pick the health plans that we want to work with, that agree to the principles that we want to come up with. So that's something we want to explore. I'm going to ask Dr. Melnick to kind of talk about that a little bit more in this next slide.
I don't know how well that's focusing. It may just be my vision as well. But this is just a summary of the two models that we've already talked about. The model where the state, the model on the left is where the accountable community of health is really kind of advisory. The state is a payer and contracts with managed care organizations, which could include, you know, any number of managed care organizations, including those from outside, as well as the RSN, and they have the relationship with providers, and the accountable community of health is advisory, and there's no risk bearing in terms of the accountable community of health. It's the managed care organizations and the RSN. That being said, I mean, I think we've already discussed the counties are on the hook in a way, because especially around the issues around jails and failure in our behavioral health system ends up. There's no way the counties can completely get away from being a risk-bearing entity. The model on the right is the one that we're actually recommending, and what we wanted and what we've already presented, where the Regional Health Alliance is actually the risk-bearing entity for the entire system. And now they may subcontract some of the risk with the managed care organizations and the and including the RSN, but the idea here is that not only do we have, it's more than advisory, the accountable community of health is really a coordinated care organization, and the risk, even though it's in the RHA, the risk is borne by all the partners, the multiple partners within the RHA, which includes the providers, the health systems, the counties. We all share in this together, and we have local oversight. And this just gives you, this is just a table that talks about the differences. You know, if we become a risk-bearing entity, we share the risk. We would do kind of similar to what the health share model in Portland that Vanessa mentioned. There would be a reserve account to help manage that, but we would share the risk among all the entities within the RHA. The other on the right hand side there is the other model where we're advisory. The health plans bear the risk. We're concerned about that because one of the concerns we have, especially with the large, if we end up with these large for-profit managed care entities that are providing services, is that they'll err on the side of they're more for-profit based, and money will come out of the community, and we will not have as much control in terms of outcomes. You know, we'll leave that to the state. So those are the comparisons. I don't know, Vanessa, if you want to add anything.
You know, so one of the things that there's you know, people have kind of this belief that we're trying to turn the RHA into a health plan. We're not. What we're trying to do is say we want to be a coordinated care organization, and we would subcontract with health plans. We do need to have more than one health plan. We need to give clients choice. So we're looking at working with Columbia United Provider. We're looking at working with the RSN. We're looking at working with the Washington State Association of Community Health Plan, who does
the
federally qualified health clinics. And we're even willing to approach the for-profit health plans if they're willing to work with us. But we have many providers underneath here, and they also want choice of which health plan they work with. So they're not interested in just one health plan being there. So we do need to bring in multiple health plans that will also have reserve account, but their job will be strictly to do like payment providers and quality assurance and that kind of stuff, trying to do system transformation change, because that's not what health plans do.
The other point, so there will be choice. I mean, I've heard criticism that there won't be choice. There could be multiple plans within the CCO. The other point I want to make is if we're really going to achieve the triple aim of better care for individuals, populations, lower cost, we have to have these systems working together. And one of the components of it that's not on this chart, and we didn't put it up there, is if we become a CCO, we can develop a health information exchange. We will develop as part of this a database where the different entities can communicate with each other, so that if a patient ends up, whether they end up in the emergency department or a long-term care facility or in a clinic, the providers will have access to on data for that patient. Just like you can go to any bank And no matter whether you're a member of that bank, you can get your financial records. It'll work that way in the healthcare system as well. These systems will be able to talk to each other. We'll also be able to use, and this can be HIPAA compliant. It will be HIPAA compliant, but we can also look at aggregated data. Besides better individual patient care, we'll be able to, as a group, look at aggregated data. We'll be able to take a look at what are the health issues affecting the population in our region, and how can we better direct our services to better to do a better job of addressing those particular health issues. The other point that I, you know, in terms of true integration, I've got a primary care background, unless we integrate chemical dependency, mental health, and primary care together, we're going to miss a boat. And not only in terms of the service delivery, but also in our information systems. If you're seeing a diabetic in a clinic, and they happen to have a chemical dependency issue, and you can't address that at the same time, you're going to miss the boat in terms of taking care of their diabetes. And you know, you put on top of that that they're homeless. And you know, you could work on all the diet work or all the insulin work you want to do. You're not going to improve their health status unless you're able to deal with all these issues concurrently. So that's the dream of having a coordinated care organization. Will be able to do that.
I'm seeing a huge administrative overhead to this. And so my question is, when we go back and we start talking about administrative costs, where does our administrative cost start and end?
Yep.
In other words, are we going to be the decider of health care and the bookkeeping of the health care, and then there's going to be huge costs? Is that going to be borne by the county, or are we going to get money from the state?
This will be borne by the group,
the nonprofit
organization. It won't be the county. It'll be the Regional Health Alliance.
And who pays the alliance?
So they're talking about taking 2%, 1-2% off of the health plans, if you follow that other model, to give to the accountable collectives of health to help pay for the accountable collectives of health. That still needs to be worked out. So what we're saying is that we know we're going to have at least 2 physical health plans in our community, so they take 1-2% from that and give it to the accountable collectives of health. What we're saying is if you put it together, we would just take 2% off of that and put the rest down back to services to the health plans. So they are taking money off the top of the health plans to help pay for the accountable. And then they expect the rest of us, foundations, United Way, counties, the hospitals, to also put some funding into this. So.
And you have slides on the county impacts, and
yes, I do.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm still not hearing, other than local partners paying for this, mm-hmm. where do they get their money? I mean, other than 1-2%, and all of a sudden we've lifted all this responsibility off the state.
Yeah, you know, one point I want to make is if we do this right, we actually control the cost of this whole system, and we actually keep, if we do it the other way, we're going to have these large managed care plans that are, some of them are based here, but the larger ones, the for-profit ones, are based elsewhere. They're going to take the money they get, and it's going to go out of the area for their administrative costs. We're actually thinking if we keep this function here, we can actually control the cost of the system, and I believe we can make it work economically.
I guess where I'm going with that is today, we pay state taxes, and the state pays for low-income Medicare. Where's that money going to go? Money that is collected right now and pays for all the Medicare help, where's that going to go?
So Medicare is still a federal system, and that's not part of that. That
Medicaid.
Medicaid?
The money that we give the state today as taxpayers to pay for low-income health care, where's that going to go?
So that goes to, it comes down to the state in a block grant, and then they're going to put it through these different kind of risk-bearing entities.
The state's going to give it to us in a block grant.
Well, they give it usually by a capacitated budget through actuarial studies for how much the population is. So there's work, lots of work done behind that. But what I would say is they are going to, it's going to come down whether it's going to health plans or it's going to come down to the RHA, it's going to come down to our communities. And right now, if you think about how healthcare is doing it, they have given money, the Medicaid money you're talking about, to four health plans in our community. And I don't see health improving in our community. So right now, you've got four health plans down here, and they don't work well necessarily with each other. And we have two of them that are part of our RHA, but we don't have a lot of influence in how what they pay for and how they change and do different kinds of stuff.
I'm seeing a big crash at the end. Because every time the state has had money that we gave them, and then they give it back to us, and remember the $4 million that we pulled from our health care, I anticipate that the state will do this. They'll pull that back to balance the state budget, and we're going to be left with this responsibility of providing Medicaid for people in our region.
You are absolutely right. If they don't give us enough money to help us pay for the match for the classic Medicaid,
and I don't expect them to,
we are going to be in trouble. It's a problem right now that we have. That's not going to happen in the future. It's happening right now with chemical dependency and mental health. So that's a problem going on right now that they are slowly pulling away from some of their responsibility. And that's not going to change. It's happening now.
In all ways, we see it in our roads. All the money that they're getting from the federal government is being trickled and controlled by the state. The federal government now is giving less for the interstate highway. We see the same scenario. As you know, they never stopped the taxation. They just stopped the delivery of it. And that's my fear in this process.
It's a big risk. It is. But they are passing the risk down.
You know, I keep using the scenario of the penis with the football thing. How many times has someone has removed that football and we keep falling on our back because they want to do something different, which gives them more control of what goes.
You make a point.
And the bottom line is immigration is required by law by 2019.
The CMS is pushing integration in all states, yes. Yes.
You know, but the bottom line in terms of improving the health status of folks who and the health care of folks who live in the region, if we do this right, I mean, the state's never going to give enough money. But if we manage this right, I think we can actually provide better services for lower cost. People are going to suffer either way if there's not enough funding for their health care. There's no doubt about that. But if we do this right, given that issue, I think we can actually, the money will go a lot further. So, because business as usual, just as it's been going, doesn't really work.
So I want to talk about the impacts to the county. One of the impacts that's going to hit us is financially. So my department manages the funds to help with the Medicaid dollars, and they plan to use, you know, and take that program and integrate it with the mental health in phase one. So basically, in 2014, we're estimated to receive, you know, that amount of money, and same for 2015. 2015 will be the final year we receive the funds. Now, they've been cutting this pot of money for the past 10 years.
What is that money?
Is this the state DD for the Medicaid?
Yes.
So, for the Medicaid dollars.
It's a combination of many different kinds of funds, including our match funds for Medicaid.
And so that will go to be a part of the integrated procurement. What that means for us is that we've been preparing for this for a while, so we're trying to do workforce planning because we know it will impact staff. You know, that's a lot of money to lose. So hopefully we don't get in a situation where we have layoffs, but that could be a possibility. We will also, we pay county indirects. So what we're estimating at county indirects for 2016, right now we're looking at estimated, we're working on them now, about anywhere between $110,000 to $140,000, with half of that being paid to the county. So again, it puts us in a dilemma that we will not have the money to help cover our own indirects, but also the county indirects, which money goes to the general fund. So that is something we wanted to make sure that you are aware. But we are trying to find solutions to make sure the services stay intact. But there will be a financial hit to Clark County, my department. Again, now we want to talk about kind of the RSNs, and that's where Chris and Connie and them are here. The Medicaid procurement that they're looking at for chemical dependency and mental health, they are giving RSNs an opportunity to submit a proposal. I think Southwest Behavioral Health does want to create a combined chemical dependency and mental health piece here. What what I want Clark County commissioners to understand, and this has been a sore spot for chemical dependency for a long time, is they do not put enough money into chemical dependency. And we use a lot of local funds to plug the gap. So now, and we do not have a risk-bearing contract right now with the state, Department of Social Health Services. But if you put this money inside the RSN, it now moves to a risk-bearing entity, and they have to sign a risk-bearing entity contract. So I want to make sure you understand what that will mean if they don't give them enough money to deliver the chemical dependency services in our county. Again, this is just a reminder of what an RSN is. They are a health plan. 7105 is kind of the RCW that governs them. But the last highlighted thing that I want you to read about them is that the RCW does read that each county entering into that agreement to create an RSN shall bear a share of the cost of mental health services. It will add and chemical dependency. So, Chris, I don't know if you want to talk, and Connie, I'll hand this over to you guys to talk about this.
Okay. Let me, if I can, talk a little bit. I'd like to back up, if you bear with me, but I'll be real brief. I think the county, there's certainly risks for the county no matter which way you go, but it's important for you to hear this. If the county doesn't become involved, everything that you've heard about the jail is true. It's already to some extent happening in Pierce County. We know that Pierce County has adopted an insurance plan system, and where they fail or where they fall short, those people tend to wind up in the Pierce County jail. So there is clearly that risk. On the plus side, what you're trading for local control is, and especially as this evolves out into a fully integrated system, is the risk to provide for not only mental health and substance abuse, but medical care services, and you will be responsible for paying that. Now, it will be broken out between you and the other counties, and there's discussion that Dr. Melnick has given you about the fact that we can share that risk with some of our other providers. But what's important for you to understand is the risk starts out between us and the state first. So we may be able to require our providers to take on a share of that risk as long as they have money when we need it. But when it starts out, if there's a problem, the state's going to look to the contractor first. And so if we're the first contractor, or if a couple of counties are the contractors, they're going to look at the deep pockets first and say, if you want to get indemnification or share risk from your other providers, that's great. That's up to you to go find that money. We're going after you first. So the risk you take on is a very real one.
Chris, before you leave that, who has the risk now?
It depends. On the RSN field, we do receive a capitated payment, and we are taking on, the county does take on a share of that risk already as a part of the RSN. In the mental health field, because it's a fee-for-service,
chemical dependency.
It's a fee-for-service model, so you get 50 fees, or you do 50 services, you get 50 fees, whatever the fee is. So it's pretty simple, and the state maintains that risk. We have known over the last 10 years, there's been discussion, you've heard it at the county levels, we've heard it at WAPA, that the state is going to increasingly push its risk over on the local governments, and they've done that. We've seen it, and it's continuing to happen now, and they're providing less funding. So what you're taking on is more risk for less money, and your alternative is to turn it over to an insurance company, which isn't a viable option, but those are really the real situations you're facing. So as we discuss all these concepts, a lot of this is very premature. I mean, we've talked about how we can provide services, but some of the services and the obligations that we have to provide those levels of care, if you look at what we have to do in the jail, for example, if that's any model of the standards to which we're going to be held, there are jails in this state that have had to provide kidney transplants that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Kidney dialysis, maybe $10,000 a service. Now, those are great. Certainly the exceptions, but the cost of medical care is huge. The other risk I think you need to understand is even in the area of information sharing, an area that I spent a lot of time doing research, They're very disjointed. HIPAA is not consistent with 42 CFR, which deals with drug treatment information. State laws, in some respects, dealing with mental health are more restrictive than even HIPAA. And mental health has its own set of standards. And then what is a party who's entitled to this information isn't even agreed upon among all the systems. And so while we're struggling to work through that, and we're hoping we'll come together with a model, what I'm getting at is this is very early, and trying to assume this is all going to be ready to go in the next couple of years at both recognizing the kind of federal and state cooperation you'll need is a very heroic sort of optimistic assumption. So I just, as your attorney, I want you to know that there's a lot that's going on, and while on the one hand we're not in a good position, we've made financial commitments in the Center for Behavioral Health. Our taxpayers have voted for additional taxes to help provide services, and we've provided human capital investments. So we have huge investments in all of these areas that militate towards continuing on. On the flip side, there are very real risks, and so that's the summary, but I don't want you to leave this. If what you said, Commissioner Mielke, is very true, we will certainly take on risk, and as we go even further and all three systems are consolidated, there is, in the best of all worlds, the chance that we could do this and we could save money, or at least do it and not lose money. What you need to be aware of is there are real risks that you will lose money.
And I guess at that point, I'm looking at what we're doing. And what we're doing, we're going to remove the burden from the state so that we can have more responsibility. And to me, it doesn't calculate. The state has chosen to go this path, and in choosing this path, they're pulling back and letting someone else be responsible for their delivery. And that's what's going on. By dividing this up into all these different regions, that removes the responsibility from the people who are accepting this type of health care.
So maybe if we can maybe hear from Connie, because they've been working on a plan of how will they deal with chemical dependency. They've got the health, mental health, but that to help address some of your questions about that. So,
Commissioner, I have prepared a one pager for you to kind of with the goal of wanting to share with you the perspective of how SWBH will see its own role within the healthcare reform. So, with your permission, I would like to share that information. I might not have enough copies to take this one. So, just a brief overview. So, Commissioner Mielke and Commissioner Stewart, when you made a decision way back in October of 2012 to merge Clark RSN with Southwest Washington RSN and also with Skamania County, the goal was for SWBH to evolve to a behavioral health organization that will be capable of managing both mental health and chemical dependency funding. So that vision has not changed among us as staff working within this organization. We continue to position our organization to take on that responsibility should we continue to have an opportunity to do so for Clark County and also for Skamania County as well as for Calhoun County. So as Vanessa and Dr. Miller has mentioned, is that the state are creating two entities at the same time. One is the Accountable Collaborative of Health, the ACH, and as Vanessa has mentioned, and also the Accountable Risk-Bearing Entity. There are two types of accountable risk-bearing entities. One is a behavioral health organization that manage the risk for just mental health and chemical dependency. And then there's another accountable risk-bearing entity that is responsible for the entire population, and that is physical health, mental health, and chemical dependency. Our vision for this organization is for SWBH to become a subcontractor of any risk-bearing entities that would win the bid to deliver services in this region. So we do not plan to submit a proposal directly or independently on our own, because we as an organization do not have the expertise nor the capacity to take on the full risk for the entire population. So our expertise is only in managing, we believe, mental health and chemical dependency. I wanted to also address the risk that all of you have concerned, because as Chris has mentioned, regardless of whether you take on the role of governing the public mental health system or you pass that responsibility on to any other entity, the risk will always be there for the counties across the state. How you manage risk, it takes more than money. It takes more than putting more money in the risk reserve to deal with potential lawsuit. The effective way of managing risk is a combination of having sufficient money, which the state will require of all the risk-bearing entities. At the same time, it will take extensive work on the clinical level, and that is service utilization management. You want to make sure that you have an array of services delivered to the people based on their need, and these are individuals that have multiple complex needs, mental health, chemical dependency, and physical health. So therefore, the work at the clinical level is very critical to promote integration. What we have done for the last 20-plus year as an RSN for Clark County, I believe that we have been successfully managing the risk of Clark County for the last 20 years. We have extensive knowledge in understanding a capitated system. So we recognize that the CD system is moving from a fee-for-service system to a capitated system, and that is definitely a different payment method. So managing risk does require any risk-bearing entity to have extensive experience in doing that, and I believe we have been doing that successfully for you for the last 1 year. We have put in place, to address your concern around risk, we have put in place several programs, such as we work in partnership with the court system here to find a mental health court position to help assess early on inmates that may have mental health and CD condition and then passing on to alcohol for treatment. We have actively involved in the JDI initiative to make sure that the kid receive comprehensive assessment so that if they do need mental health treatment, that you do refer them to mental health treatment rather than diverting them to detention. So those are some of the risk diversion that we as an organization have been doing for you for the last 20 years. So we also have a contract right now with the state to address offenders that are leaving the jail system, and making sure that before they return to the community that they are well connected to receive services within the community. So right now I just wanted to echo Chris Horn's comment that there are so many moving parts. I'll give you an example of the moving parts. Right now it's very unclear about what the state is planning to do with CD funding. The chemical dependency dollar, there's a talk that it may be going to the RSM system, there's a talk that it may be going to the physical health, and there's also talk about splitting the CD dollar and give some to the mental health system to serve individuals with mental health and chemical dependency. And it's also talk about giving some of these money to the physical health system because they are also responsible to implement the parity law. So there are so many unknowns, and I applaud our community in terms of taking a proactive approach, looking at different ways of how to move forward with integration. But I just wanted to caution you to please consider multiple options before you settle on one potential option, because there are many moving parts and things are changing constantly.
I think one of the things that I'm seeing, Connie, is that the state is slipping out from underneath the responsibility and sending no carrots down here with her. And I think it's irresponsible for us to jump up and say, I'll do it. Don't worry about giving me any funds to pay for it. And that's what we're doing. Now, we were told in the first phase of this with the RSN was that we had a choice at that time to have the state do it or we can do it. At that time, I don't think we saw the other bow wave coming down behind it. So we've got this big goo slowly coming from Olympia and covering up Southwest Washington, where we become responsible for what they have accepted as a plan. And I'm having trouble with that. If I'm going to be responsible for it, I need to be able to be part of putting the plan in place or even choosing the plan. We're not given that choice other than saying, state was your idea. I don't see this going in a positive fashion. I think I'd like to give it back to you.
Yes, and I totally agree with you, Commissioner Wilkie, that there is no new money in implementing health care reform.
And that's what I'm hearing.
Exactly. And so you're trying to reinvest the current money that you have right now.
I'm not quite sure how you reinvest something you've already spent. Commissioner Dorr?
I think what you're expressing is what we're, the storm that's upon us. We don't like the politics, but it's upon us. And even though we don't like it, we don't have a choice. It is dictated to us. And our choice is not whether or not we're going to accept it. We're subservient. We have to accept it, right? So the only choice is before us is how we're going to implement this and how much local control, or how much are we going to just simply say, let the free market do it, which is a national entity.
That's correct. So regardless of how much money the state gives us, if there's not enough money for chemical dependency, those chemical dependency clients who don't get services because there's not enough money are going to end up in the jail. I mean, we're stuck. We're between basically a rock and a hard place, and the best way to deal with this is to have control over whatever system does exist, to be able to have some local control over that, because if we're creative about how we do this and we bring all of our partners, there are a lot of resources in this community that are interested in working with us, and if we bring our partners in, I think we could do a much better job of managing the risk and, for example, keeping people out of jail, as an example.
So the two areas, appreciate the that you're expressing the opportunities associated with this regionalization of service and integration of care. That's excellent. There are risks that have been identified. Are there actions that we can advocate at the state level to ameliorate the risks and maximize the potential? You know, what are the things that we can be doing? And I'm not asking for you to give them all. I won't remember them if you tell me all of them right now. But if you write them down, those are things that we can advocate for, both individually as a county and as a region, but also collectively at the state level as well. And that's, because that's the piece, we're stuck with what we're stuck with, but if there's an opportunity to change that or to minimize the risk, those are the kinds of things that I would love to be able to be working with, state officials on. And we have friends at that level that hopefully will help us with that, so.
Well, yeah, one of the state is very interested in what we're talking about doing here. And one of the things, if we do this right, one of the things that we'll be doing is and, this is my public health hat here, is we'll be doing surveillance of the system. Whatever, if we have some a control over how the service is delivered, the data that we get out of our service delivery system is going to be a message to the state about what needs to be in place to make this work right. Right now, healthcare is kind of like a black hole in a lot of ways. And I think, we'll be able to provide some feedback and say, hey, look, this is where we need to make some changes in the system.
That's one area we can strengthen at this rate and state level, as you just said, control. If we have control, well, we don't. Even if we establish this system, you're subject to state control. So how can we ensure that there is local and regional control since we're taking the risk, and how can we minimize the risk? I need suggestions of how to do that to be able to take to legislators and others.
So it looks like there's really two agendas. One is we don't like what's been thrust upon us, and so we try to change the state by lobbying and determining how best to do that. The other is I think of the join or die snake that's been divided up. It's a matter of are we going to unify ourselves, accept the snake, that there is a snake, and that we got to deal with it. The other is that it appears that we have some unfinished business. When the RSN was formed, the integration of chemical dependency was to be part of that. It's not part of that. And moving forward in integration, it needs to be part of that. So that needs to be addressed. And I understand that RSN and chemical dependency, CD, you guys aren't on the same page yet. You're wishing for kind of an independent separateness, and you're imagining, and the state is putting the pressure on us to integrate, and then absorb in and include the RSM behavioral health into that, right?
Yes, really, we want a more collaborative model.
So you need some directions from us?
I'm definitely into integrating mental health and chemical dependency, but I think we're going to miss the boat if we don't integrate that with physical health as well. So,
what do you mean, Dr. Miller? The integrate, indeed, what?
Primary care. So when somebody shows up at a doctor's office with diabetes, for example, they're actually able to recognize and deal with a chemical dependency issue that may exist at the same time. The services become integrated, including the funding streams and the way we deal with this.
I understand that, but that third leg is part of what's in front of us today. When we have CD and mental health in front of us today, combining that, we'll start to get a feel of what else we can combine.
Well, with the RHA model that the coordinated care model that was one of the models that we presented to you, it would do the three legs of that stool. It would include physical health. So those are the two models that we're actually talking about right now.
Mark Ballinger, SWBH. And I think at this point, there's kind of two different options, really. If you're just looking at behavioral health, whether it's through the RHA or an ACH or something along those lines, or like the RSN system. Right now, the RSN system, really, the board is the commissioner. So the counties have control over the mental health system. If the decision is to not have that structure in place, whether it's like an RHA or something else, I mean, other folks, that would be opened up to other people bidding. And at that point, the county folks may be a member of a larger board, but they wouldn't necessarily have that county control. It may be local control if the local entity is selected, but if it's an outside insurance provider, like what happened in Pierce County, you know, then it's the county's just at the mercy, if you will, of that outside provider. So that I think that's a difference of the RSN being truly under county control and influence versus if it was given to a separate nonprofit entity, then it opens it up and then it's more of an influence unless that RHA is successful. And even in that case, it's the county's role as an influencer. Does that make sense?
You know, the only thing I want to answer to that is, as Connie mentioned, the RSN is not going to go for the procurement itself. It's going to be a subcontractor. So either you're a subcontractor with the RHA where the counties do have some influence, or you're a subcontractor to a large, for example, out-of-state for-profit where you guys may have influence within the RSN, but not there's no local control over that.
That was my point. It sounds like, as much as there may be a difference of opinion in some ways, I mean, if you're applying to be a downstream contractor of the RHA, that is the model that's being suggested here, and it's simply a question of, you know, what role does the RSN play as one of those, whatever you call them, the ARVEs, you know, as one of those or as part of one of those, which will also have other health plans which will integrate the physical, you know, and so they don't have to be doing the physical because you can have multiple ARVEs or whatever that you would be one of. So I'm missing what the discrepancy is in what you're suggesting and the model that's also being suggested. And, you know, I don't get the two options. I mean, the two options I'm hearing is the model that is being suggested, or turn it over, you know, to a larger federal organization. What am I missing?
What you're missing right now is that should the state put out a procurement for a behavioral health integration, mental health, and CD, the county is not clear right now as part of the legislative language. The county may still have the first right of refusal. So that's the biggest thing. So that means that if the state move forward with CD and mental health integration, if the county say, no, I still wanted to govern CD and mental health integration, you still have that opportunity.
But that's not what you're even suggesting in here. The suggestion is to have the RHA be the one that basically is the contract that, you know, that would get the funds that would subcontract, aren't you?
What I provide you are two different options. One is to do mental health and behavioral health integration through the RSN system, another option is to do the behavioral health and mental health integration to RHA system. But right now, if you were to do the behavioral health system, the RHA right now is a for-profit organization.
Non-profit.
So it's a non-profit organization right now, and according to the current law, the county has the first right of refusal to decide whether you want to do mental health or not. So let's say if you decide that you do not have any further interest in having anything to do with mental health system, you leave it to the RHA. The RHA, the state has to change the law to allow a non-profit organization to become an RSN. So that's the first thing that you need to do, that the state needs to do. Right now, if you want to follow the current law right now, but in the future, it's open up to anyone to bid for.
Right. Sounds like that there's a discrepancy on that as well.
We're out of time, and it sounds like we have a whole bunch more maybe to consider. I'm also hearing now that we're kind of waiting for the legislature to do something to fine-tune. So at this time, we're not likely to make any decisions.
The only thing I do need to hear from you guys is if you want to stay in the Southwest Washington region, and we are recommending that you say yes, because we would like to let Abby Murphy know.
So that's the only question that we're really looking at.
That, and then we would like for, hopefully we get your support in the Regional Health Alliance. We don't know if we can apply for the risk-bearing contract, so we have to come back to you with that. But we hope that you would support that. But the real decision is the region you want to be in. So.
So what we're in right now, we're in a holding pattern of what we already have.
Yeah, we're kind of talking about staying where in the region we're at. So.
Yeah, and I think that's probably more acceptable for the board because we, once again, we lack answers as the legislature moves about trying to fix things.
And I think eventually the question for Connie and them is, do you want to continue to have an RSN with mental health and then added substance abuse? That's the issue, because they're a health plan, and that's where, and whether it's under the RHA or it's with United, that's the question for you guys, because you're part of an interlocal county that is responsible for the RSN.
And I think that's kind of what we're in the holding pattern to see if the legislature puts something in place to allow that to work. And we can't do any more than what we're doing today, and that's in the holding pattern of being more informed than what we were. Pushing the door. Wrap up.
Ian, that I sit on the RSN governing board, and this is going to be an agenda item that we need to decide on whether or not to direct the RSN to become a member of the RHA or not. And that's something that I didn't feel it was appropriate for an individual commissioner to choose, but it would really be the reflecting what all three of us ought to do. And because at this point it sounds like we have, this is dynamic in flux, it's happening, and either we get left behind or we are proactive, innovative, and collaborating to at least explore the possibilities. And this is something that we ought to be able to just decide.
Well, the quick question I guess I have then is, regardless of which way it goes, whether you know it's RHA subcontractor that you end up being, or whether it's through the RSNs, you know, whatever you're talking about, either of those two options that you have, Connie, can you integrate chemical dependency into your services and in either of those two models? Does it work either way?
Commissioner, from my perspective, going back to the administrative concern that Commissioner Milky brought up right now, the RSN system is a managed care system for the last 20 years. We are very capable of managing both the money and the administrative function for mental health and CD.
You don't have experience in CD. Mark might have, but the rest of the staff
don't. I don't
know,
think you question your ability at all.
Right.
I question whether or not you can financially do it.
Yes. We can financially manage
mental health
and
or doing
either model. Like you said, it's a longer conversation as to whether or not which model you choose within this. I guess for the purpose of what Commissioner Medora asked, is pursuing is taking that next step in the mission for the RSN of CD and actually moving into that. Can that be done? Is that a good step to take regardless of which model we choose?
I believe that if you're asking, should we continue to explore, is that
Well, Commissioner Medora is asking for kind of the board's guidance.
Really, two things. One is the integration of the CD into the RSN. The other is whether or not the county should be becoming a member of the partnership. All these alphabets.
What's the downside?
So, Commissioner Medora, I think it's important that as you make a policy decision for me to serve on behalf of SWPH on the board, I think that's important to also seek some legal advice, because here's a potential concern that I have as a staff, and I'm not a legal counsel, so Chris may chip in. My concern is that it really depends that right now, if you are supporting the RHA to explore the possibility of becoming a risk-bearing entity, and at the same time you are governing a risk-bearing entity, there might be a potential conflict of interest, because you are exploring for another entity to potentially competing with the RSN that's already a risk-bearing entity. So that's, I do not know,
sure.
Steve, but I just...
I keep hearing this being a huge decision to make right now. And so my question is a little quicker. Do we have to make a decision right now?
Well, just to answer the narrow question, there's a very small short-term question that I think you do need to answer, and that's, I think, Commissioner Medora's question about whether having them be a partner on the RHA, and that's going to be an issue coming before their board. So that one you can answer without regard to everything else.
So for that one specifically, is there a downside to having the RSN represent on the RHA?
Right now there is no seats open, but what we would do is put her on a list so the seat open.
That's not my question. My question, is there a downside?
The downside is she would not be part of the decision making on what happens with the planning that we put forth. She would be part of the work group, but she would not be a decision maker.
But if she were on the board, that's what you're asking. If there were a board seat, and would she be... Would there be a downside to, if there were a board seat and she was on the board, would there be a downside? No, I don't see a downside. I see an upside to it, because other plans, we already have other plans on the board.
So, and you're taking it to your board.
Well,
seeming downside as far as...
Well, we would hope that the, he's asking, should the RSN be part of the RHA? And I say they should be.
Yes.
Because you have all these partners there. So.
And it may be that, let's say we take that step, and now you're a member. That in the exploring process, and as we discover, as you do your work, that you discover that, well, you know, we've reached a point where it makes sense to split that off. Mm-hmm. Then you can always say, well, I can not be a member, right? Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, there's an advantage. And if you discover some reason that there's an advantage to be off, then you can make the change.
But, right now, I only see an upside, really, because that expertise and, around is...
On the board. So that's a narrow question that we don't, that's all we have time for, and if you want to reschedule, because we are way...
And we already said we want to be in Southwest, right?
We're all... Yes, we already said.
As a follow-up, it sounds like we need to have some kind of work session or something that has to talk about, or that talks about integrating
the CD and mental health
with RSN.
Because they need to come talk to our finance people about the budget.
Data
and the budget.
You hear our concerns and questions. You just can't keep taking more on without a way to pay for it. And so when the state says you need to make this decision, I say, yeah, I'd like to make this decision, so my dollars come with it. Or maybe we should wait for the legislature to be more active on it. Okay, that's all this we're way over.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Nobody saw it.
Nobody got you.
I'm a mess. Yeah.